God and the Great Ordeal. The elder asks John of Patmos, who are these that are robed in white? He's like, dude, you know the answer to this question. And the elder's like, these are the ones who have come out of the great ordeal and have washed their robes and they have become white in the blood of the Lamb. How many of you got hung up on the idea of something turning white being washed in the blood of the Lamb, right? I leave it in there and I don't change it. If I were to change it, I would change it to the words, they have been washed white in the life of the Lamb. Because we need to remember that in Hebrew theology, life is in the blood. You do not eat animals that have the blood in them because that life force energy does not belong to you. It belongs to God. And this is also how the Hebrew God commands us to not commit acts of violence, because that life, that blood which is shed, does not belong to you, and it is not yours to shed. It is God's. And on humanity, when the life force, when the blood of a human is shed, God demands blood for that blood. Now, we want to think about this differently, but I just invite you to consider that in the Hebrew Bible, this reference is made to remind us about the dominion of God, about the authority of God that can easily be neglected when we no longer respect blood, when we no longer respect life. This is a critique of empire, because empire does not respect God's dominion over the blood, God's ownership of life. Empire assumes that it owns life and that it can call the blood forth whenever it wants. So being washed in the blood of the Lamb is really about being washed, being transformed, being taken up and changed over by the life of Christ, by the love of Christ, not just his earthly ministry, but by the cosmic Christ who loves us and lives in us today. So John of Patmos probably never met Jesus, but he has been changed. He has been transformed by his relationship with Christ. So much so that he has the authority to speak to these seven churches. Remember, the book of Revelation is written as a letter to seven specific churches that he knows so well that he can talk about the internal politics in each of those churches. It's as if Mike Denton were to write a letter to the churches of West Seattle and praise us for the things that we're doing well and name some stuff where we could grow. We would respect his opinion, not only because he has authority, but also because we know him, because he's preached here, because we have relationships with him, because we know that he cares about us, right? Even it says in Revelation, in one of these letters to the churches, I reprove those that I love. Which is, I believe, another way that God works. That we get challenged but I'm not even going to go that direction. See, I think one of the difficulties, if you take this logically in this direction, is that God tests us, right? There's one way to say we get called out by God's Spirit. There's one way to say that when we are acting the fool, we get convicted, right? We realize that we've acted the fool. But then there's this other, more toxic direction that we can go, which says our life is going just fine, and there's three legs on that stool, and then God comes and kicks one of the legs out and wants to see where we're at, right? This whole language of test and trial. Now, what I want to offer is, if we lean into this theology, this idea that God is the one who puts tests and trials into our lives to find out if we're real believers or not, then what that ultimately means is that God cares more about our theology than about our identity. Because what is your identity? That was too slow. What's your identity? There we go. God cares about your identity as God's child, as God's beloved. And an attitude with a child is that we don't kick legs out from under chairs of children. It's just cruel, right? You who know how to give good gifts to your children. You who are pain-ridden know how to give good gifts to your children, right? This is back from the Sermon on the Mount. How much more does your God know how to give good gifts to God's children? So we have to let go on some level of this idea of God being the one who tests or tempts or tries us. But that's not to say that we are not tested and tempted and tried. There is real struggle to stay committed to God, right? There is real struggle to stay loyal to the principles of vulnerability and honesty and humility and nonviolence and love, right? We had our people witness to this. Whether it's our own personal struggles and suffering, whether it's our own mistakes or betrayals, whether it's the lack of control we have in other people and they're bringing their pain-riddenness into our lives, the challenge to hold that in the way that Christ calls us to hold that is heavy. It is difficult. So then how shall we understand this concept of being tested or tried? Well, what I would like to offer is that it's not authored by God, but it is expected by God. Because there's going to be times where the stool has three legs on it and is stable, and there's going to be times where one third of those legs gets knocked out. Like, life is going to fall apart at some point. Everything that is stable will get disrupted at some point. What's the one constant about life? Change. Therefore, every time we get everything just so appointed, just so fixed, just so figured out, and we become complacent about this is how the world is now, then something will come along and disrupt that. The question is not what happens. The question is how shall we respond to what happens? Saying this is the important piece to remember is that it's not about the disruption that occurs. And in the book of Revelation, especially as the seven trumpets are blown, this comes to a head. Because there's disruption, there's chaos. The first four trumpets, what happens? A third of the earth is burned up. A third of the trees are burned up. A third of the people are killed. A third of da-da-da, a third of da-da-da. What's happening? One of the legs of that stool is getting kicked out. It's happening by war. It's happening by famine. It's happening by plague. It's happening by insurrection. It's not that God is causing them. But it's anticipated that those things will happen. The question is, how will we respond to them? Have any of you ever heard the old Cherokee myth? There's a Cherokee elder sitting with his grandson, and the grandson is perplexed and anxious, and things are not going well in the grandson's life. And the elder says, within each of us, there are two wolves. There's one wolf who is bent on anger and jealousy, motivated by rage and fear. And there is another wolf who is motivated by benevolence and love and peace and joy. And they are constantly wrestling with one another inside of us. And the grandson thinks about this a moment, says, well, who will win? How will we know that one will triumph over the other? And the elder says, it's simple. It's the one that you feed. It's the one that you feed. In our own scripture, the book of James, which was actually referenced in our Bible study this morning about the mouth, has some things to say about being tested by God. This is James 1, 12 through 16. Blessed is anyone who endures temptation. Such a one has stood the test and will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love God. No one, when tempted, should say, I am being tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted by evil, and God tempts no one. But one is tempted by one's own desire. being lured and enticed by it. Then when that desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. Remember, sin in the Greek is to miss the mark. And that missing of the mark, when it is fully grown, gives birth to death. Do not be deceived, my beloved. We're not perfect. At least, I'm not perfect. I don't know about y'all. But we're going to screw stuff up. Even if it's not the world that kicks the leg out from under us, it might be us that kicks the leg out from under us. How many times have you made your life a lot harder than it needed to be? Yeah. How many times has somebody brought you something and it was a beautiful and glorious gift and the first thing you noticed about it was whatever impurity or imperfection or something wrong with it was, and the first thing that came out of your mouth was your observation about that. And they just stood there and they were like, you screwed this up for me. And then you have this choice in front of you, right? How are you going to respond? How are you going to respond? Are you going to double down? Are you going to get defensive? Well, it did have a crack in it. I mean, that could have hurt somebody, right? I'm going to find all these reasons that I was right. Because when we lean in to thinking about the thing that happened as opposed to how we're going to respond, when we spend our energy reflecting on the thing that happened, the thing that took the leg out from under the stool, two things are likely to happen. Either one, we're likely to reflect on that and think, God, I got to get more control over my life. I got to be more in control of how things work and the things that affect me and the things that don't. I got to start cutting people out of my life. I got to start setting harder boundaries. I got to start being more rigid. But more likely than that, and probably more sinister than that, is we'll start thinking, God, how is that my fault? Like, how did who I am cause that to come to be? I dropped my son once, badly. Like, he fell right out of the car seat on his face. It scared the shit out of me. I had to take him to the emergency room thing. Like, he was all scraped up and like, oh, fuck. It happened in this parking lot even. Like, I hadn't secured the handle on the car seat, and I didn't strap him in because he had fallen asleep in it, and it went down the stairs, and it just tipped forward, and I just watched it. Do you know how many times I've replayed that in my mind? Him just, boom, asleep, hitting the concrete. I have had the opportunity every day since that happened to reflect on what that means about me. What that means about me as a parent. Am I going to tell people that that happened? I had to think really hard whether I wanted to tell y'all that that happened. Because now I'm thinking, now every time they see me, they're going to think, he's the guy that throws kids on their face in the concrete in the parking lot, right? But how would we know if we didn't share it? See, this is the thing. Brené Brown talks about this all the time, about shame. Where does shame get its power? It gets its power when we hide it, when we keep it inside, because then it can lie to us and tell us how horrible and terrible we are, right? Now, if you spend time reflecting on the thing that kicked the leg out from under your stool, then it can start to mean stuff about who you are. It can start having commentary on your personhood, on your value, on your worthiness, right? And your anxiety about other people knowing is actually about them having a black mark placed upon you. There's something wrong with this person because they did this thing, they made that mistake at that time. Even if it was horrible, even if you did hurt people, even if you did hurt about the most innocent person you can think of, and it's terrible. that it could become our mistakes, our frustrations, our disappointments, our betrayals. They could become our identity. Right? This is constantly under threat for us, or at least we think it is. Why do you think I want you at a moment's notice to tell me exactly who you are and what your core identity is? Because at a moment's notice, your mind and your fear could tell you some other identity. That your anxiety and your shame and your perception about how the world sees you could tell you who you are. And it could be a lie. And you could believe it because you were there and you watched that happen. That person was hurt by you. That gift someone gave was rejected by you. He's calling all the time. And he still loves you. And the message he's going to give you every time is that, you know what? No matter what. Yeah. No matter what. You're my beloved child. And I'm not going to save you from this stuff. I'm going to go through this stuff with you. Then instead of reflecting again and again and again, which is what I did for days after that happened, just watching him fall out of that car seat, I started remembering, yeah, what happened right after that. They picked him up. And I wiped him off, and I held him, and I fed him, and I took him straight to that urgent care clinic, and I called my wife immediately, and I owned it immediately. And we went there together. We were there for a couple of hours, and I skipped whatever else I had to do, and I took him home, and we put salve on his face every day, and you would never know. But even if you could know, even if he was marked by that for the rest of his life, it's not about what happens to us. It's about how we respond to what happens to us. It's not about when the leg gets kicked out from the stool. It's about what we do about it. That's what tells us who we are. And more importantly, it tells us where our loyalties are. It tells us where our commitments are. Because stuff's going to go wrong, folks. Stuff's going to get broken. You're going to screw up and hurt somebody. It might not be today. Might not be tomorrow, but sometime soon. Heck, maybe it's at coffee hour. I don't know. But like, yeah, right? You know not what time or hour the master will come, right? That's not actually in Revelation. That's in Mark 2. But the question is going to be, when whatever happens, happens. Are we going to trust or are we going to hide? Are we going to show up and be honest and vulnerable and open and kind and humble? Are we going to be repentant, which means to turn around, to renew our mind? Are we going to take seriously the critique that's given us and sort between, you know what, that's probably their stuff, and I need to figure out how to forgive and allow them to have their stuff and not let it be mine? And that is mine. You know what? Like, I do need to be careful about that because it is dangerous, and that's precious cargo, and I should have been thinking more, and I'm going to. Right? Or are we going to get defensive and cynical? Are we going to start saying, well, this problem is actually everybody else's problem, or they need to suck it up, or stop being so sensitive. Stop being so damn sensitive all the time. I'm not offensive, I'm funny. It's about our loyalties. Because that's what Revelation is ultimately all about. Is it empire or is it the Lamb? Is it the strength and power and control and dominance that when stuff goes bad, we're going to double down? Or are we going to say, you know what? I serve the Lamb. I serve the one who shows up vulnerable and honest, the one who shows up weak and harmed, the one who's not trying to hide, the one who's going to get up here and screw up in public and trust that even if there are people in the audience who are so pain-ridden that they can't accept me, I know whose acceptance I really need and whose I really have. Our ordeals are not desired by God, but they are expected. It's going to be hard. One of the things I always talk about suffering is, you know what? If there's going to be matter in the universe, there's going to be friction. If there's going to be matter, if there's going to be stuff, then stuff's going to bump into other stuff. And friction is going to be produced. But you know what that also means? If there's friction, there's relationship. There's contact, there's encounter. So it's not about the fact of the friction, it's about what that produces. How do we respond, not what happens? So God doesn't desire our ordeals. God doesn't desire our suffering. God desires our loyalty. God desires our commitment. Not because God wants us to be subservient or in submission to God. Although, I mean, we could have a great theological conversation about that. But it's because God knows that our loyalty, God knows that our commitment to God's way of being, to following the Lamb, will lead us through all of our ordeals, will take us and carry us through all of our suffering, our pain, our loss, our betrayal, the death that we encounter in this life. And it will give us the possibility of resurrection, the possibility of renewed life, the possibility of a time after what we're going through now. So I encourage you, next time you encounter an ordeal, next time the third gets kicked out from under you, to ask yourself not, why did this happen to me? But really ask yourself, how am I going to respond, and where is God in my response? How is God leading me to respond to this next crisis? And if you ask that, I promise you, God will reveal God's will and God's self to you. Might not be right away, but it will happen. Because that is the desire of God for us to live in relationships.